This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good evening and welcome to Well, Well, Well tonight on Joy 94.9. This is Jason and Adam with you from the Health Promotion Program at the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre. Welcome back, Adam. It's been a while since you and I have been on air.
It has together. Been a while, hasn't it? It feels weird.
It feels fine. But it was actually great to have Asian Pop Radio Australia on before us for a little bit of a change.
I know. It's very
shaking
different.
Things out.
Sort of walking in here going, what's happening? Is it the right day? Are we actually here? Should we be here?
We'll have to try and keep the energy up just as high as it was with that show.
Pump it. And I'm sure your musical choices will...
Well, you've seen...
I've seen one.
I think it'll compete fairly well.
I'm still skeptical, but you know, look.
You're always skeptical regardless of whether or not we're talking about music or anything else.
That's true.
It's something you provide to the show, really.
Yes. But Jason, what is on the show this week?
Well, this week in the US, the 20th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections is happening. And there's been quite a bit of media around some of the scientific presentations that have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to give the listener a bit of a run through of some of the highlights. And there's some exciting stuff and some local researchers' work being presented as well.
Yeah, I know. It's fantastic. There's lots of stuff that's come out. So we thought rather than have a guest on, let's cover some of the bigger
news items. Let's show how big of experts we can be. Right?
Yeah.
You're right? Yeah.
Epically, I'm with you.
I
have faith, just no expectations.
Woo.
But we do love to hear from our listener. So how can they get into contact with us? And they can do that many ways.
There's lots and lots of ways, Adam. Run through them for us.
Well, you can phone us directly. And bless you, people still heard that. 1300-JOY-949. You can email onair at joy.org.au. You can SMS 0427-JOY-949. Or you can like us via Facebook, which is facebook.com/wellwellwelljoy.
That's right. But we're going to listen to a bit of music right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a favourite group of mine to play on the show.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. You don't even have a list of them. Oh, it's
no,
a big
I don't.
Surprise. It's The Gossip.
Oh, I do like The Gossip.
There
Hopefully
we go.
You pick a good song.
It's The Gossip with For Keeps.
Oh, I do like... Okay, I like that song.
There we go.
All right, so one for one.
One for one so far. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and you just listened to a bit of The Gossip with For Keeps.
Mm-hmm. Good choice.
So far, I'm up 1 point.
1-1. Kicking goals.
I'll be impressed. I'm sure that I'm going to kind of lose a few later on, but I'm sure the listener will love the music.
I have, I have no doubt on both counts, probably. So what are we actually chatting about this week? Because obviously this is the time of the show where we like to change tracks.
We do like to shift gears somewhat and get into some
papers.
News. But there's a lot of news this week.
That's it. So we're actually only changing tracks once.
Well, we're going to shift gears every segment, really, as we go from one news story to the next.
Mm-hmm.
But all of them are some highlights from a conference that's been happening this week, and it's the Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections, which from now on we will call CROI.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's a scientifically focused meeting of the world's leading researchers working to understand, prevent, and treat HIV/AIDS and its complications. The goal of CROI is to provide a forum for translating lab and clinical research into progress against the HIV/AIDS epidemic. And it's a meeting of about 4,000 researchers and clinicians from around the world, and it's held every year. So some of the disciplines that meet at the conference include people working in virology, molecular epidemiology, HIV immunology, pathogenesis, HIV transmission and primary infection, gene therapy, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on. Now, for the listener who maybe doesn't feel like they're completely fluent in some scientific jargon, never you fear. Because we're going to try and break it all down for you.
Well, look, we're going to try.
Yeah.
But I think the first article that really came to our attention, and obviously this has sort of received, nationwide publicity, is the case report of a functional HIV cure in a child.
Yeah. So this was, I think, more commonly referred to as the baby that was cured of HIV. But it's important to point out that really... it's a functional cure.
Yes. What does that exactly mean?
Well, essentially it means that HIV still remains in the body, but it's no longer, the virus is no longer replicating, so it's not making copies anymore.
Yeah.
So in this case, what it's similar to what we've spoken before on the show about the Berlin patient, which had
yes.
a similar type of, which had a similar experience and was functionally cured of HIV. So this particular incident where researchers in the US they essentially identified a case of a functional cure in a child infected with HIV. And this this child began antiretroviral treatment or anti-HIV medication within days of birth.
Yeah, and I think the interesting part about that is, in terms of the functional cure aspect, is the fact that the child has actually been off treatment for a year. Because we do know that HIV medication does suppress HIV within the body to sometimes undetectable levels, or levels that are below than what a test can actually detect. Yeah. So when people go off HIV medications, their viral load does tend to, within, I guess, about a month or a month and a half, sort of come back up to detectable levels. And after, I guess, being off treatment for a year, although HIV has been detected at very, very low levels in the child's sort of, I guess, cells within the body, the virus is actually still not replicating.
Now, it's important to point out that transmission from mother to child is quite rare in countries like the US and
in
here.
Western countries, yes.
Yeah. And that's because if a mother is found to be pregnant, there's usually HIV testing that happens very early on and encouragement to go on treatment to yes. minimize the likelihood of passing it on to the child during birth.
Yes, it is recommended that if you're HIV positive and you're not already on antiretroviral treatment and you become pregnant, that you would actually take it in the third trimester to actually help prevent transmission from mother to child.
So in this case, the child was actually delivered prematurely at 35 weeks, and the mother only went... HIV antibody went through HIV antibody testing at the time of delivery, and she had never been in HIV care before then. And after the child was born, 30 hours after birth, it was tested for HIV as well, and those tests already indicated that there was detectable HIV within the blood.
Yes. And I guess it is found out during, not during the birth, but obviously quickly after the birth, that the mother is HIV positive and the child is potentially HIV positive or antibodies have been detected, that they would go on a course of basically what we call PEP. So post-exposure prophylaxis, like a 4-week course of anti-HIV medication. But in this case, because virus was detected in the infant and the infant had confirmed HIV infection, treatment continued until the age of 18 months.
Yeah. And what was, I guess, interesting was that, as we said, once the child was taken off, although the virus is being found in the blood, in particular reservoirs, but at very, very low levels, it hasn't spiked since.
Yeah, and I guess there was a six-month period where the child was not followed up in terms of regular testing and whatnot. So when the child returned at 23 months, so that's 5 months or 5 months, 6 months, 18, 23, that's 5 months.
Yep.
Yeah, 5 months of age, it became apparent that viral load was not detectable in the absence of treatment. So I guess... this was pretty astounding to the clinicians, And they obviously sought some outside help just in terms of double-checking bloods and cultures and things like that, just to make sure that it wasn't really something that they'd missed, that this was actually a fact. And it's fantastic news.
It is. And really, it's being seen as a proof of concept. But what they're keen to do now is develop some trials to investigate whether or not this would be possible to replicate a functional cure in a larger number of infants.
Yes.
And if so, it would be quite an exciting development in the area of mother-to-child prevention.
That is fantastic news. Well, this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and tonight we are talking about some highlights from the 20th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections, from now on referred to as CROI, but I'll do a little reminder from here on out. And before the break, we were talking about the story that came out this week of a child who was born to an HIV-positive mother who was essentially found to have been functionally cured.
We have an email come through, an SMS come through, saying, wondering if this could mean the harvesting of an immunisation antibody. Wow, that's a very difficult question to answer, I would have to say, just in terms of the way the virus actually works within the body, the virology and immunology, and the fact that it's a child who was on a course of anti-HIV medication basically from the get-go, mm-hmm. in comparison to people who may have been taking antiretrovirals for several years or recently or haven't even commenced. So this potentially does give us a little bit more hope, but I don't think it necessarily suggests that that's something that's just around the corner.
But I think it's interesting. It's quite different to the way in which the Berlin patient was functionally cured. And what's, I think, exciting about this opportunity is that, or this finding, is that we're seeing that, reaching a functional cure could be done in different ways depending on the particular context of infection.
Yes.
So, you know, I think the more we see cases like this, the more light, the better understanding we'll have on the kind of mechanics
exactly.
of how this is actually happening. But I think the issue with HIV and antibodies is the fact that it's something that mutates quite quickly.
Yes, it does. As someone who's way above my pay grade had once described it, it's actually a very clever disease in terms of the way that it actually replicates within cells and all of that virology sort of stuff. So it's quite different to anything else. But, I mean, fingers crossed, every step forward is another thing that we learn, and this is obviously a fantastic new development. So who knows?
Stay tuned. Well, especially, you know, all of these, a lot of these discoveries will likely be further developed in time for the conference next year here in Melbourne, which is the International AIDS Conference. So there's going to be more stuff coming our way.
Very much. But the next article that we sort of came across is actually, it was about condom use.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, we've talked quite a bit about advances in biomedical prevention, which is about using treatment, either early treatment to help reduce the likelihood of onward transmission, or risk reduction strategies to help reduce the risk.
Yep, microbicides.
There's
PrEP,
a range of
PrEP.
There's a range of new tools that have been added to our toolkit, our prevention toolkit, and some of them have a range of efficacy, but I guess not quite 100%.
No.
And the argument that often comes back is, well, we know that condoms are 100% effective.
Exactly. They're the bread and butter in terms of HIV prevention. But I guess based on some of the social research data that we are provided with either through the Kirby Institute or through the National Research Centres as well, we do know that consistent condom use isn't always happening.
Yeah, exactly. So if not used consistently, we don't really know how effective they really are, but...
But now we do.
Exactly. Thank
now
you.
We do.
Look, see that segue?
No, you don't say segue.
Oh.
Never mind. Anywho, the actual article was consistent condom use in anal sex stops 70% of HIV infections, but intermittent use has no effect. And I guess what I mean by intermittent use is people that sometimes use condoms and sometimes do not. So I think what is most important, or one thing that I found actually really surprising, what it was that this, I guess, research project provided the first estimate of the efficacy of condoms in preventing HIV transmission during anal sex since 1989.
So it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, but it found that condoms stopped 7 out of 10 anal transmissions, or the same efficacy found in the 1989 study.
So nothing's really changed in terms of the efficacy.
That's correct.
But I guess what's interesting was in the two studies that they used to form this this review, in one of the studies they found that 43% of the men in the trial had had at least one incident of unprotected anal sex.
Mm-hmm.
And in the other trial, 51% of all men in that trial had had unprotected sex.
And that's with a HIV-positive partner.
Yes.
Yeah, so basically what they did was there was these two studies. They followed them up every 6 months, one study for a period of 3 years, one study for a period of four years. And what they did is they took HIV tests once every 6 months. And over that previous 6 months, they asked, have you used condoms all the time? Have you used condoms some of the time? Or have you not used condoms at all?
And what they found was, you know, they kind of lumped them into two groups. Guys who, what was the efficacy of those who said that they use condoms 100% of the time?
Mm-hmm.
And what was the efficacy among men who had that intermittent use? And what was interesting is that of the men who said they use condoms 100% of the time, they were 70% less likely to acquire HIV than men who never use condoms, and 60% less likely than men who said they sometimes use them.
Yeah.
Now, can you explain how that difference comes about?
You mean mathematically?
Well, I mean, the thing that comes to mind is you'd think it would be pretty high, but I guess the issue of people self-reporting whether or not they're using condoms.
Well, I mean, there is, with every type of social research that is self-reported or you're actually interacting with a researcher or a peer, there's always that social desirability bias, which...
What does that mean?
And by that, it's kind of like you always want to report that you're doing better than you actually are. So some of the people that might have said that they're using condoms all of the time might not actually have done that. But... overall, based on all of the studies, looking at everyone for every 6 months, the one thing that they found that was consistent was the fact that no one was consistent.
Yes, and so...
I said that
break
to you.
It down for me, because I think I went a little bit cross-eyed when we were talking about this before the show.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that we've got some listeners that are slightly confused. What does that mean?
Well, basically it means that for maybe the first 6 months, I use condoms 100% of the time. Had my HIV test.
Yep.
For the next 6 months, I might have used condoms not at all. And then for the next 6 months, I might have used condoms some of the time. And then for the next 6 months, I might have used condoms again 100%.
So essentially, our condom use patterns don't remain consistent.
No, only 16.4% of, I think it was over 3,000 men, I think, like combining both of the studies together. No, actually, 7,000 men. 7,000 men said that they used condoms 100% of the time. But when you really think about it, you go, that's roughly around 84% of people that are consistently changing their condom use patterns.
And I guess that's kind of... their patterns may, for all intents, be perceived as being consistent, but means that, you know, for 85%, 86%, there are occasional... slip-ups.
Well, exactly.
Or otherwise.
And there's also, you know, people might get into relationships.
True.
They might leave relationships. There's lots of different contextual factors. So I think that the main point of this research was just to sort of reinvest in the fact that condoms can be 100% effective, but it's really understanding the fact that people aren't actually using them 100% of the time, all the time, with every partner.
That's right. Now, it's important to point out that these studies were, I believe, in the US.
Yes.
Of American men. So, you know, there will be some differences in terms of condom use between, you know, our boys here.
That is correct.
And the guys in the US. But still really, really interesting trial nonetheless.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I guess it's really just sort of important to point out that we do sort of get this data, I guess, retrospectively from the Gay Community Periodic Survey that's run here in Melbourne in terms of over the past 6 months, have you engaged in unprotected anal intercourse, receptive with a partner, casual partner, or in a relationship? And what's the other one? No, that's it, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's I guess it's interesting to be able to look at those. It's really a cohort that they're able to follow along. It'd be great if we could say, you know, well, at the periodic in this past January, people be able to track the differences between whether or not people were consistent for the past 3 years.
Exactly.
Or if they had some inconsistencies like the guys that we see here.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we'll be posting the links to all these articles on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/wellwellwelljoy.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got a little bit of camp music to play. It's been a while since we've played a little bit of Spice Girls.
Ah, 2 for 2. Oh, yeah. Actually, which one did you choose? Oh, actually, I know which one you chose.
Exactly. It's Wannabe. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and that was a little bit of Michael Jackson with Janet Jackson and Scream.
3 from 3, Jason. Very, very unusual results.
I'm on a roll, but I'm sure I'll stuff it up.
Yes, yes, indeed you will.
I'll be curious to know what you think of the rest of the music, and if you're listening, send us an SMS to 0427JOY949 and let us know if you think I'm 3 for 3 as well, or if you just tuned in, let me know what you thought of that track.
Yes, but changing tracks, even though we thought we might not be changing it as much, is something that we found locally, which was a very, very, very interesting piece of research.
Indeed.
Or discovery.
It's a little bit of local research done by Dr. Sharon Lewin at the Alfred Hospital, and she's also the co-head of the Burnett Institute Center for Virology, and she's been a past presenter at the conference for retroviruses and opportunistic infections, so it's still fitting with the theme.
Well, it is. It is. It's just a bit of an add-on.
It is indeed. And it's about, it kind of links well to the story that we had before about the functional cure, which identified that there were some reservoirs of latently infected HIV cells.
And what does that mean?
So it's essentially, if someone is HIV positive and on effective antiretroviral treatment, while it'll help with the virus that's in the bloodstream, there quite often are reservoirs of HIV infected cells that are just kind of dormant or sleeping, which the drugs can't actively take care of.
Yeah, and I guess the article, and it was on Star Observer, it says that Melbourne researchers, including Sharon, have edged closer to finding a cure for HIV after successfully luring the sleeping virus out of the infected cells, which is basically meaning that those ones that are hidden in reservoirs, it's sort of being able to target those with antiretroviral treatments and sort of bringing out that sort of sleeping aspect of the virus.
Exactly. So the current antiretroviral drugs, though, don't effectively bring the drug out, bring the virus out of those deep burrows. But the cancer drug, vorinostat, which has just started to have some clinical trials, including some local men who were actually the first to be included in that trial, vorinostat seemed to do just the trick.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, it was 20 HIV-positive patients in Victoria who were the first in the world to join this 2-week trial of vorinostat. And basically, they found out that this particular cancer drug altered how the HIV genes were turned on and turned off. So basically, that's what we're talking about in terms of latent cells and dormant cells and waking up cells and, you know, cells of all kinds. Really.
Essentially, the sleeping cells, the sleeping HIV is kind of a viral DNA burrowed away into infected cells.
Exactly. And antiretroviral treatments, or the ones that we currently have available at the moment, actually can't reach those sort of hidden reservoirs. So this drug was actually able to reach those places. So it's actually pretty exciting news.
Yeah. So essentially what that drug does is go in and flicks the on switch.
Mm-hmm.
Wakes them up. And now the big question is, how can we take care of getting rid of that virus once it's woken up?
Well, exactly. And I mean, Sharon did sort of make the point that, you know, we've shown we can wake up the virus. Now we need to sort of work out how to get rid of infected cell. Like, you know, a kickstart to the immune system might help. And obviously we're not in the virology aspects. So there's obviously a lot of clinical behind the scenes work that has to be done to sort of make sure that we can take the next step going forward. But this is really encouraging.
So this is more work in the area of HIV eradication.
Yes.
Research. Mm-hmm. And Sharon is a leading researcher in this area. And it's really exciting because we mentioned before that in 2014, the International AIDS Conference will be coming to Melbourne. And she's actually the local chair for that conference organizing committee.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd imagine that there'd be quite a shift in spotlight, if you will, on the area of HIV eradication research at that upcoming conference. And I imagine there'll be quite a bit of a push to get you know, the rest of the results for this trial out in time for that.
Yeah, and I guess the results that have come out of CROI have been pretty incredible. Well, the research that's come out, and I haven't been to an international AIDS conference, but I think you have.
Mm.
But you might have been to a couple, I think.
I have.
So is it the same sort of stuff that comes out?
Yeah, I mean,
like all the same sort of like groundbreaking sort of information and research that's available to all?
Yeah, it's quite... The last one that I went to was in Vienna. And I remember there was quite a bit of excitement and buzz around the release of the results from the CAPRISA trial, which was one of the... I think not one of... The first vaginal microbicide clinical trials that actually showed some protective effect.
Yeah.
A lot of... Every other one either was kind of... had the trial stopped halfway because there was actually increased transmissions or just wasn't seen to be effective at all. So just to kind of feel the excitement and as I said before, the buzz around this bit of progress is really, it's inspiring. It's motivating to be working in the sector, to be a part of that. So to have the conference come here next year, and put a spotlight on some local work, which is really, really exciting and groundbreaking, is going to be a great opportunity for us.
And to think that, you know, it's obviously over 12 months away, or I think it's sort of happening around...
It's July of 2014.
So, I mean, that's, you know, a good sort of 14, 15, 16 months that who knows what can happen in terms of, I guess, local research and international research.
Exactly.
That in maybe, you know, in 14, 15, 16 months, we might be talking about something completely different that's just as groundbreaking.
That's right. And you know, the conference isn't only a way for professionals working in the sector to come together and get involved. There's something called the Global Village, which is free, free to anyone to come to go into. And there are mini presentations or there are video screenings of the plenaries. So it's a way to really engage the local community into the work that's happening in the area of research and community prevention, and really try to raise the profile of HIV in the region at that same time.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it. And the fact that I don't really like to travel on planes makes it fantastic for me.
It's really exciting. I worked in Toronto in the sector when the International AIDS Conference was held there, and working in the sector in the local hosting in the hosting city is exciting. It's draining, but because you've got all of the conference activities and then the stuff that you're actually doing for the conference as well. But it's a great opportunity to meet colleagues doing similar work overseas, to show off the wonderful city that you live in, and the great work that we do as well. So, there'll be much more information coming out in the coming months, but, stay tuned next year. And at the very least, we get to show off Aussie rules.
Oh, so totally looking forward to that.
Exactly. I'm looking forward to taking some of my mates there. But this is Well on Joy 94.9. And yeah, those are the highlights from CROI.
Yes. Next time you want the right woman, you
Joy 94.9.
This is Well on Joy 94.9, and that was Dragonette with The Right Woman.
Fail.
I still think it was a win, so I'm going to take that as a win. I'm 4-for-4. And it is that time of the show where we like to talk about a few things happening in and around the community.
Yes, indeed we do.
And it's a very, very busy time. It is summer, and it's a beautiful summer.
And you would think after World AIDS Day and after Christmas and New Year's, and then we had Midsummer and then Mardi Gras, you think things would be slowing down, but they're not. Oh, God. They're not, Jason.
Oh, no. Tell me more.
Well, you went to Mardi Gras.
I did. And I think I'm still feeling really tired, but, it was a good time. I had a great time at the party. I just took a very, very relaxed afternoon at Opera Bar, having a couple of wines and, yeah, it was all right.
Different to the previous night where you accidentally hateled me.
Oh, yeah.
Well, accident, I guess not.
No, it wasn't accidentally at all. I couldn't believe it, but the DJ was playing a really fun remix of Ain't Nobody Got Time for That. And let me tell you, I had lots of time for that.
Yes, indeed you did.
It was very, very fun to see just how many people recognized it.
Sweet Georgia Brown.
Sweet Brown. But anyway, yeah, coming up next, this weekend is Chill Out.
Chill Out, yes. So, I mean, it's actually literally this weekend. So everybody's got to get their butts sort of down there tomorrow or tomorrow night or Saturday. But obviously it's happening at Daylesford over the Labor Day long weekend, which is this weekend. And for those of us that don't get Monday off because we're at university, that's actually quite annoying. But look, the parade, the Carnival Day are on Sunday, the 10th of March. Big party, obviously, that night. But especially Victorian AIDS Council / Oblique Gay Men's Health Centre will be at Carnival, a stall number 16, and we'll be giving out show bags and obviously safe sex packs and all stuff like that.
Exactly. So come on by and say hello. A bit of Well alumni, Jill, will be at the VAC stall.
She will. And as I said last week, in the show bags... in the show bags for Chill Out, there's actually something different that wasn't at Midsummer.
Is there?
There is.
Are we allowed to say what?
I don't know.
Go check it out.
Yeah,
find out for yourselves.
Go down.
Don't be lazy.
Grab a bag. Get a safe pack.
All right. Now, just after all of the Chill Out madness is over, guess what kicks off? Queer Film Festival.
Aha.
Busy, busy times. And we're really excited because... Being Brendo, one of our web series that's been going now for 7 seasons,
mm-hmm.
Geez,
long
whiz,
time,
is having a special screening again.
Yes, and it is on Saturday, the 23rd of March at 4 PM at Acme Studios or Acme Cinemas. Acme Cinemas, yeah, in Federation Square. So you can actually get tickets if you want to come along at melbournequeerfilmfestival.com, but I think it's probably
mqff.org.au.
There we go.
I'm glad I'm here. so tickets are available. It's the first time actually that tickets have been available because generally they've been swept up really, really quickly by Golden Toffee member passes and giveaways. So if you want to get a sneak peek, you can go to facebook.com/beingbrendo.
And the fantastic thing about if you're actually already a fan and you've actually been following the series so far, that you'll actually get to see the rest of the episodes before they're aired on Facebook or YouTube.
Indeed. So it's a bit of a sneak peek.
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting. And there'll also be, once again, there'll be another panel discussion following the screening featuring cast and crew.
Yes. And we've got 2 special guests. Can
we do?
Can we mention who they are?
Let's mention them.
Judith Lucy and Denise Scott.
Oh, I got to love Brandy and Brenda.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be there along with the writer-director and some...
A couple of the core cast,
exactly.
Yeah. And you get a free mug, too.
Indeed you do.
Should we have said that?
Well, if that gets people through the door, come on down. If you want to pick up tickets, you can do so at mqff.org.au. But, Adam, would you believe it is time to say goodnight?
If you could see what Jason was doing in the studio. Put your pants back on. I know. I can't believe that we've actually gone through a whole hour already.
I know. Well, it was
flown by.
There's been lots of stuff happening this week with the conference. So, leading us out this evening is a little bit of Scissor Sisters.
Oh, okay.
With Any Which Way.
Oh, okay. All right. So you're 4-for-5.
Ah, there we go. I still think it's my top score. But
it is.
Anyone you'd like to say hello to?
I'll say hi to Nancy Bluey Lukovic.
There we go.
Don't know who they are.
Fantastic. Well, we'll be back next week, 8 to 9 PM.
See yas. This Joy
Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.